reading from the Holy Gospel according to St. Luke. Jesus said to his disciples, "As it was in the days of Noah, so will it be in the days of the Son of Man. They were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, up to the day that Noah entered the ark, and the flood came and destroyed them all. Similarly, as it was in the days of Lot, they were eating, drinking, buying, selling, planting, building. On the day when Lot left Sodom, fire and brimstone rained from the sky to destroy them all. So will it be on the day the Son of Man is revealed. On that day, someone who is on the housetop and whose belongings are in the house must not go down to get them. And likewise, one in the field must not return to what was left behind. Remember Lot's wife. Whoever seeks to preserve his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life will save it. I tell you, on that night there will be two people in one bed. One will be taken, the other left. There will be two women grinding meal together. One will be taken, the other left." They said to him in reply, "We are, Lord." And he said to them, "Where the body is, there also the vultures will gather." The Gospel of the Lord. Sunday we had that powerful parable that Jesus gave us about the five wise bridesmaids and the five stupid bridesmaids. The wise bridesmaids were always full of the oil of love in their heart to go out to meet the bridegroom whenever he came. The foolish ones thought that other things were more important, didn't have enough oil, thought that they could borrow it for others, were caught off guard and left outside eternally. That same breakdown between those who are truly wise, who seek after God, who wait for his appearance, and those who are foolish, those who are caught about doing so many other things that are far less important, is present in the readings today. In the Gospel we see it. Jesus makes it very clear. The time of Noah, most people were caught off guard, most were foolish. The time of Lot, most were foolish and immoral. He said, when the Son of Man comes, if you happen to be in bed, go to him, because one will be taken and the other will be left, the one who just turns over and hits the snooze button. He said, two women will be in the kitchen grinding meal. One will be doing it with the Lord and for the Lord and together with the Lord, and the other will be just grinding meal. The first one will be wise and will go with the Lord. The other will be left. In everything, we're called to be looking for the Lord, to be desiring the Lord. That is the key to wisdom. Today's first reading, we see the same breakdown. In the world, the author of the Book of Wisdom was saying, God has left his fingerprints everywhere. But some see the fingerprints of God because they're looking for God. Others make the fingerprints gods, and they start to worship the fingerprints. What did the fingerprints look like in the ancient world? Fire, wind, swift ear, the circuits of the stars, the mighty water, the luminaries of heaven, the governors of the world. The author of the Book of Wisdom say they started to think that all of these were God. There was the God of fire, there was the God of wind, there was the God of rain, there was the God of snow, there was the God of love, there was the God of war, there was the God of hatred. All human things which were supposed to lead them to God, they began foolishly to worship. Because they weren't really seeking God. They were seeking something to worship. And they wanted to seek something to worship that would fit into their own categories rather than change their categories to worship God. Most of us today don't worship fire. We're not arsonists. We don't worship water or snow or the sun or the moon. But we can be as foolish as they were. Money, material possessions are supposed to lead us to God because we recognize that they're all gifts from Him one way or the other, including if He's given us the talents to be able to earn it with our own sweat. But sometimes rather than having those lead us back to God, we start to worship material possessions. The beauty of human love is meant to remind us of God's love for us that we're supposed to say, I love you too, in response to. But instead, some people can make sex a god. And rather than coming to adore the Lord here on the altar, just stand in front of a computer screen, worshiping human bodies through pornography. Our own ability of self-governance, our own ability to be real stewards of others, we can likewise deify so that we become our own gods. And we start saying, my will be done rather than thy will be done. The key for us, like at Noah's time, like at Lot's time, like at the time of the Book of Wisdom, is to see whether we stop at what we observe, we stop at what we're doing in this world, or whether we try to relate literally everything back to God the Creator, either in His presence or in His absence. This is the secret of a truly wise life, of a truly good life, a life that will have us ready. Today we celebrate the feast of St. Martin of Tours, who illustrated for us very, very well how this takes on practical relevance. He was the son of an officer of the Roman army in Hungary. And those who were sons of Roman officers had it made. They were almost automatically going to be officers in the Roman army, which is a great way to get ahead. So from the time he was 18, he was an officer in the Roman army. And he was outposted to northern France. Gaul, it was called at the time, to a city called Amiens, which has got a famous cathedral today. One day during the brutal northern French winters, as he was making his rounds on a horse with the other officers in the Roman army, they saw a naked man shivering at the city gates because of the cold. The typical Roman soldiers ahead of Martin just galloped on. Saw the man, thought that it wouldn't be worth it to arrest him, and off they went, despite the fact that he was shivering like crazy. Martin, who back in Hungary, against his parents' wishes, had become a catechumen, desirous of baptism, but he, because of the Roman military training, couldn't go through that 2 or 3 year course in order to become a Christian. He had continued to desire the Lord, but he hadn't yet become a Christian. When he looked at that poor shivering man, didn't just see a poor shivering man. He saw someone made in the image and likeness of God, whom the Lord was asking him to help. So he got down off his horse. He didn't have anything that he was carrying in order to be able to care for him. So he took out his long Roman sword. At which point that shivering man thought that the soldier was just going to strike him down, as so many people would have abused this poor man at the gate. But Martin, with that sword, took off his huge and very expensive Roman kappa, his cape, and he sliced it right down the middle with that sharp sword. He put half of it over his shoulders, and he covered that poor man whose name he didn't know with the other half. Martin's fellow Roman soldiers thought that what he was doing was crazy, cutting up his uniform. You know, imagine somebody from West Point coming in his big long winter coat, would just take out his sword and cut that coat right down the middle so that he's only got one arm left, and he just covers himself as well as he can with the other half and gives it to a poor shivering man. That's what Martin did. It didn't make sense to his contemporaries. But that night when he was going to bed, he had a dream. And in the dream, Jesus appeared to him. Jesus was wearing the other half of his cape. He said, Martin, just a catechumen has covered me with his cape. Jesus was putting into action the words he had said at the end of St. Matthew's Gospel, that when I was naked, you cared for me. That's precisely what Martin did. Because he was desiring the Lord, because he recognized that what he observed wasn't just data, but that that poor man wasn't just another human being. He was somebody that Martin was called to love. He was somebody in whom he saw the faintest glimpse of God. And little did he know that it was more than a glimpse. Christ himself took that action personally. It was at that point that Martin was convinced that he had to become a Christian, in fact, as soon as possible. It took him 2 years in order to leave the Roman army, in order to be able to go through that catechumenate and become a Christian. But he did. As much as he had his lifetime made in the Roman army, he recognized that he wanted to become a soldier for Christ. And he did. Became a priest. He enrolled, more or less, in the cathedral school of St. Hilary of Poitiers, learned the faith from him in great depth. And then he himself was asked by the people of Tours, which is a great Roman outpost, to become their own bishop, and he was ordained their bishop. From that point forward, with the courage of a soldier, he started going out in all the woods to try to convert the pagans. And there were many pagans. He had to use some brutal things in order to bring it down, as soldiers sometimes did. He needed to destroy some of their little temples. He needed to cut down the trees they were worshiping. One favorite story was when everybody was opposing him there, he said, you must cut down this false idol. It is not God. They made a deal with him. We'll chop it down under one condition. You stand under the tree. He said, okay. So he stood right underneath the tree as they chopped it, knowing that the tree, as soon as it would be chopped down, would fall on Martin. As soon as timber was shouted out, that tree began to fall, and Martin looked, and he made the sign of the cross. All of a sudden, a huge gust of wind came and blew the tree just to the side of Martin, which was the greatest sign for those pagans that the true God was blessing him, and they were converted. But the greatest weapon in Martin's arsenal was not an axe to cut down trees. It was not his lips to proclaim the gospel to the pagans. The greatest weapon in his armory was prayer. Soon as he had become the Bishop of Tours, he founded a monastery right outside the city where he would be able to go to pray and where he'd be able to get together a whole group of warriors called monks who would be praying all day for the conversion of the empire. And it worked. What Martin teaches us remains valid today. That the greatest weapon we have as a soldier of Christ, as a veteran in his army, is that weapon of God and allowing God to become fully alive in us, which occurs in prayer and in the sacraments. That we're called to go out, not do evil, not to exercise force, not to conquer people by might, but we're called to go out like Martin did at the gates of Amiens, and conquer people by Christ-like love. And we're called with Martin to be truly wise and to see the Lord in all his fingerprints which are still around, all the good things in the world, all the places in which the Lord is absent, as reminders as to how important it is for him to be present. So that if the Lord comes for us today, whether we're in bed, whether we're in the kitchen, whether we're in the bathroom, whether we're with our fellow young people at a Catholic youth night, that we will be ready to see him wherever he will be found, coming for us always. Where, Lord? Jesus replied, "Where the body is, there also will the vultures gather." He was basically saying, where there's a carcass, you're going to get those who eat carcasses there. But the better answer is the Lord should be met everywhere he's present in his image, in his word, in the sacrament, in the events of the day. We should meet the Lord naturally wherever he comes. The great way for us to begin is to meet him where his presence is the largest in the world, where his real presence comes down from heaven to earth and is among us in the Mass. What an incredible opportunity we have if we make Jesus in the Eucharist the true center of our life. We will always be ready in whatever other form he comes. We will never be caught off guard, and we will become